Adam will be presenting on revamping soybean nutrient uptake, partitioning, and removal data with modern high-yielding genetics and production practices today. So, thanks.
Thank you. Well, yeah, Nathan nailed it there. As you said, I'm Adam Gasper. I'd just like to recognize a couple other people that are involved with this research. Carrie Lebosky is a state extension soil fertility specialist at Wisconsin. Seth Knave is a soybean specialist at Minnesota. And then Sean, my advisor, Conley, is the extension specialist in Wisconsin. The reason we're going to talk about updating these nutrient partitioning models is for two main reasons, and that would be obviously we've increased soybean yield steadily over the past 40 years, since the 1960s, when a lot of this data was established by Hanaway and Weber. And then also in the past 40 years, if people remember the decade study that got published a couple years back, it basically also showed that we were adding one more week of reproductive growth with today's varieties, our modern varieties. So if we're adding another week, and we know that a lot of uptake occurs in reproductive growth, another week of that would probably be pretty substantial, one would think. And then also just the issues with government regulations. Are they going to start regulating fertilizer use? All of those questions. And if that is something, then we probably want to have some really up-to-date and accurate figures for soybean nutrient uptake, partitioning removal that allow farmers to be economically viable. So with that, our objective is to determine soybean nutrient requirements with modern genetics and production practices across a really wide range of yield environments, which really hasn't been quantified before. And specifically, then we'll look at total plant nutrient uptake, the partitioning of those nutrients throughout the growing season, how it varies when we change our yield level, and then when the peak uptake times are, how much, and then how much of the nutrients are then remobilized into the seed during grain fill. So we actually, this was 14 and we did it again in 15, so we currently have 8 site years and about 10,000 data points, but today, just time constraints, we're only going to talk about 2014, and in 14 we had the three locations here. Hancock is an irrigated site, the randomized complete block design, split plot, 4 reps, and then we had the whole plot as 2 planting dates, and then the split plot was 8 different varieties that spanned a wide maturity group range. And so you might ask what the point of that is. Really, that was our way of getting a wide yield range, with the maturity group factor and then planting date factor. We were able, and location factor, we were really able to fill the 40 bushel to 80 bushel, or 3,000 to 8,000 kilogram per hectare range. And so to quantify this, we put our plots out, we inoculated for N, we didn't apply any N fertilizer, we made sure all other fertility levels were non-limiting, so PKS, micros, the whole ball and wax, and then we sampled these plots, and the plots were 12 rows wide because we wanted to make sure when we were doing this destructive sampling, we weren't having border effects on the yield rows or future sampling rows. And so we sample them at the 8 stages you see there, V4, R1, R4, R5.5, 6, 5, and 8 at the various plant parts when they were obviously available. And I just like to point out for the fallen leaves and petioles, we did a really good job and made sure we were collecting those every 2 to 3 days throughout the whole growing season for 2 main points. We wanted to make sure we got them all, and B, if we let them sit out there and get rained on, moisture accumulate, we could potentially leach a large amount of nutrients out of those plant parts. We quantified all 13 nutrients you see there below. Today we're just going to talk about nitrogen and phosphorus. We just only have 15 minutes. We collected, it's going to end up being a little under 10,000 data points when we're all said and done. Here's just a quick picture. This is how we collected the fallen leaves and petioles. We built these cages, about 150 of them, actually. And we thought they were good just because they allowed good light penetration, hopefully minimally affected gas exchange within the canopy, and still collected all the material. So we'll dive into the results here, and I'll just lay out this graph for everybody because there'll be a couple that look just like it for nitrogen and phosphorus. But on the y-axis, we have a cumulative percent of the total taken up or accumulated throughout the season. On the x-axis is obviously our days after emergence, and then the subsequent growth stages. We'll see this line that usually floats around R3 to R5. That's our max uptake period, and then you'll see 1.85% per day is the rate. Now, obviously, we'll get into this, but the uptake rate is going to change with the yield level. So that's why we give it to you on a percent basis, because obviously it'll change depending on what your yield is. But then we have on the side there the peak uptake, and we put it at a 4,000 kilogram per hectare yield level and then give you the value right next to it. So 141 kilograms per hectare per day there. Then in the graph, we start from the top and we have seeds, pods, stems, petioles, and then the darker blue is leaves, and then this kind of light blue here is fallen leaves and fallen petioles. All right. So the one thing that we obviously need to understand with the dry matter is we see, you know, basically after R1 is really when we start to really ramp up dry matter accumulation, with R3 to R5 being our peak accumulation time period. And the one interesting thing that I saw, and, you know, we read a lot like, oh, R6.5, that's probably our max dry matter accumulation. Well, we didn't find that in 14. We actually saw at R6.5, we're only at about 85% of total dry matter accumulation. So that probably is a lot due to we had a pretty extended growing season last year. But again, we have more another week of reproductive growth compared to older varieties. The other thing that we have to kind of quantify with just the dry matter in general is that, you know, obviously I have on the left just as yield goes up, dry matter in the seed goes up, a one-to-one relationship. The other graph shows that as yield on the x-axis is increasing, we are increasing stover dry matter, but not as fast and with more variability. And so what does that mean? You know, basically, as we increase our yield, we shift our harvest index, which is not crazy to believe. Other people have reported that. But here's what we saw is that basically from a 3,000 kilogram per hectare all the way up to 6,500, about a 15% change in harvest index. And that'll have a really big role on our nutrient partitioning accumulation throughout the growing season across those yield levels. For instance, Hanaway and Weber reported, you know, at 3,000 kilograms per hectare, that roughly the harvest index was 30%. Well, with today's varieties, we're showing about 40 to 45% being that harvest index. We'll move into nitrogen now, and this is just total uptake, very well described by yield with the R-squared of 0.84. We see that about 4,000 kilograms per hectare, we're about 250 kilograms of N being taken up. We increase it to 6,000, we see about 369 kilograms per hectare. So really good yield relationship with total uptake. Now this just isn't the seed, this is the whole plant being taken up above ground. And so that is actually it's decently lower than some previous reports. And so I lay out some reports, or some previous reports, Hanaway and Weber, Salvagatti et al., which was 2009, and then our 2014 results. And we see, you know, total N uptake, we have seed N removal. Now, the removal on the seed is always constant, right? We have our pretty standard amount of protein in the seed, relates very well with how much N the seed needs. So at a yield level, the seed is going to get its N or P or K, whatever it needs at that yield level. The real change is total N uptake. That's where things get hairy. You know, that's where the variability is at. But what we look in and why I think our results are lower are pretty well described there in what I call the nutrient harvest index, right? The percent of total N or of the nutrient, in this case N, that is in the seed compared to the rest of the plant. So previous reports showed 60, 68%. Well, we're showing 87%. A very high amount of total uptake that ends up in the seed, actually. And I think this kind of comes back a lot to just methods of doing this research. We collected and measured petioles and fallen leaves. A lot of past studies just estimate them. We sampled an area. We sampled 1.5 meters of row. A lot of other studies, they just, you know, 10 plants or 8 plants. It's not a given area. So I think there's a lot of differences in there. So just a quick thought, you know, if we can supposedly fix about 336 kilograms per hectare of N, that, according to our data, would give us 5,500 kilograms per hectare yield. So it's not that crazy to think that can be done, and obviously probably why we're not seeing a lot of end responses on good mineralizing soils, and even fewer economic responses. So partitioning for N here, again, same graph, really ramps up at R1. We see, obviously, a large amount ends up in the seed. Again, about 86% of it into the seed. Our peak uptake is R3 to a little past R5, with 4.2 kilograms per hectare per day being taken up at that max time. And what I would notice is if we draw these lines over here, we see that about 71% of the vegetative N is remobilized to the seed when seed filling starts. And then total amount, 44% of total N in the seed comes from the vegetative remobilization, 56 comes from uptake after R5. And one thing that I think is pretty interesting here, some work out of Purdue by Sean Castile showed that current varieties actually have more leaf biomass. So potentially, you know, if we're storing a lot of N in the leaf and we have more leaf biomass, that would give us a greater ability to remobilize more N to the seed during grain fill, you know, requiring less overall. So N removal, very, very easily described with yield, 0.9 for the R squared. I'll just, a couple quick lines that show different yield levels, how many we're removing with the seed. This is pretty constant across yield levels, right? Whatever the percentage of N in the seed never really changes. But then we'll move on to phosphorus here. Total uptake is a little more variable with the phosphorus. But again, we can see 4,000, we're at 51 kilograms per hectare. 6,000, we're at 73 kilograms. We'll look at the partitioning here. Again, a lot removed with the seed. If we draw our lines, 72% is remobilized from the vegetative biomass into the seed after R5. 48% of total seed phosphorus comes from the vegetative plant parts. 52% is taken up after R5. And then removal. Removal is explained, really all removal is explained pretty well by our yield level. The amount in the seed doesn't change a whole heck of a lot. Here we have an R squared of 0.81. 48 and 72 kilograms per hectare at those respective yields. So one of the main points that I kind of make from the old Hannaway Weber data to now ours is if we look 2014 to 1960, we showed 71, 72% remobilized to the grain during seed fill. They reported about 55% was remobilized to seed during grain fill. For us, we go over to the next graph, percent of total uptake after R5, we're showing 40%, they're showing 25%. So a key point and key takeaway for these two nutrients would here be, not only were the older varieties taking up a greater percentage of NMP before R5, so they're taking more of it up before seed fill, but they're also less efficient at actually remobilizing that into the seed. So it's kind of like a double whammy against efficiency of the soybean plant moving nutrients into the seed during grain fill. I just gave a little nutrient recap here for removal if we're in an optimum soil test zone, what the crops were moving at two different yield levels. But I'll point your attention to the far side of the graph where it shows percentage that ends up into the grain. So we have 7% increase for N, 4% for P, 11% for K2O, and another 7% for sulfur. So really, in conclusion, max biomass is probably not at our 6.5. It's probably a little bit later. We have a 15% change in the harvest index with our newer genetics. And requirements might not be as large as what we previously thought due to, again, the efficiencies and remobilizing efficiencies of the soybean plant. Peak uptake is R3 to R5, except N extends a little bit longer. And just in general, soybean plants have become much more efficient in terms of dry matter accumulation and total uptake. Higher harvest index, more NNPs remobilized. We have a longer reproductive phase for that remobilization take place. So with that, just a quick thanks for funding from the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board and DuPont Pioneer. And with that, questions?
Question for our speaker. We have time for one. Yep.
How much variation do you you have in maturity groups?
For total uptake dry matter accumulation?
For the varieties that you were working with, did you have multiple varieties for multiple maturity groups? Or did you have one variety, one maturity group?
So the question is, how many varieties did we have per maturity group, and did we have some variation with that? And yeah, we had at least two varieties per maturity group, all the way from a 1.0 to a 2.5. And then within that, yes, we get variation, but that again is a lot more related to the yield level with that maturity group planting date combination.
Okay, did you see then with that variation in your harvest index?
So variation within the harvest indexes per maturity group.
Yes.
I cannot answer that. We'll look into that. Again, we're digging through everything. I can't answer that one directly.
You need to look at my PhD dissertation, University of Illinois, 1980.
Mm-hmm. I'll talk to you after. But I guess what we're seeing is really with that harvest index is a lot with the yield level, you know, and is it really the maturity group and planting date combination doing it, or is it really the yield level that we're at that's actually doing it? And tentatively, I would think it's more where our yield level is at and the environment we're in than specifically that maturity group affecting it.
Thanks, Adam.
Yep, thank you.